Welcome to Beyond the Headlines. I'm Caroline Locker, and today we're talking about how to build sustainable cities. With me here is Professor Adele Hanna, who's with the Faculty of Engineering here at Concordia, and architect Pierre Brisset, who specializes in transportation issues. Now, if we could start by talking about the state of infrastructure in Montreal, because Montreal has had its share of disasters in the last 5 years only. We've had the Concorde overpass, of course, that collapsed and killed five people. We've had, in 2009, this slab of concrete that fell from the Marriott Hotel, its 18th floor, and killed a woman who was eating at a restaurant at the bottom. And of course, last summer, the Vigée Tunnel, huge slab of a concrete panel that fell. Thankfully, it was a Sunday and there was no traffic and it didn't kill anyone. But again, just this week, a gentleman was walking on the sidewalk, downtown Montreal, and a piece of a brick wall fell over him. Professor Hanna, should we be worried of the state of Montreal's infrastructure?
Actually, we should not. But we have an aging problem. All our buildings are getting old, and we do a little bit of maintenance and inspections. With age, things change. The deterioration due to the aging, plus the change in intensity of the traffic. So you have a combination of the increase of the load on the bridge, plus you have the deterioration of the material and this. All of these two things could combine with malpractice or mistakes in constructions. You put the three together, you get the list which you just mentioned mm-hmm. at the beginning. So we will experience these things unless we do frequent inspections to our building and maintenance, regular maintenance. Mm.
Pierre Brisset, what do you think of the current state of Montreal's infrastructure?
Well, the current state of Montreal's infrastructure, as Dr. Ahmed has said, is similar in the sense that the state of infrastructure is based on if it's not properly maintained, it ages. In Montreal, for example, ever since the collapse of the Concorde Bridge, Transport Quebec has panicked to such a point that they want to replace all concrete structures on the Greater Montreal area. And when we built our highways, contrary to Toronto, who built most of their highways on grade, so the heavy traffic was always on grade, we decided to build it on superstructures. So when you're talking about miles and miles or kilometers and kilometers of replacing superstructures, you've got a problem. Houston, we've got a big problem.
And a lot of these structures were built in the what, in the 50s and 60s?
There were, strangely enough, the structures in the 50s have a longer life, it seemed to be surviving better than the structures in the 60s.
Really?
Because Metropolitan was built in the late 50s, early 60s. They've been talking about replacing it, but they've managed to salvage it, and today they expect to prolong its life for another 50 years.
The 40 highway? You
mean the 40 highway? Yeah, the 40
highway. The highway altogether.
The highway altogether. Whereas the on the south side, the Ville Marie and the Turcotte Yards and Ville Saint-Pierre and the whole collection of structural overpasses, which were built in the 60s, now they want to replace them all. So the question is do they need to all to be replaced? Is there a way, since structures are dynamic, they live, is there ways of maybe recuperating, salvaging, or altering a bit the structure to prolong its life? Like when you break a leg, you put a cast around the leg, you don't mm-hmm, just mm-hmm, amputate mm-hmm. the leg. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So basically, rather than going to major amputations, is perhaps maybe we can do a few operations on it to prolong lives of certain structures a bit longer. And other things is that we have been spoiled in the past of building a lot of things, building highways, building networks, building metros, this, that, and the other thing. But in today's society, we don't have the means to rebuild all of this.
Why not?
Because it just costs too much. I mean, who's going to pay for it? Mm. In the sense that to rebuild the structure is usually cost five times as much as to build the original structure, because you got to consider the maintenance of you've got to maintain the existing structure operational while you rebuild it. It's very complicated. Mm.
Professor Ohana, what do you think of rebuilding versus putting a cast, so to speak, on some of these structures?
Well, first, we have to see the condition of the building. And if it really can be rebuilt, yes, we will recommend. And when we can really decide to rebuild is when the structure is no longer can serve, the serviceability of the structure is gone. It can no longer can serve. Or it does no longer can serve the objective, the purpose. We need to have thousands of cars to cross Champlain Bridge every day. If the bridge was not designed for this, maybe this is the time we can change it. If the structure of the building is no longer suitable to sustain this kind of new loading, that's the time also to change it. Other than that, maintenance is needed, regular maintenance, proper inspections by qualified engineers, not by just maintenance technicians. Mm-hmm. And that will lead us to sustainable structure.
So at the moment, would you say there isn't in place a proper structure for inspections from the government?
Well, this has remained to be seen. You know, I would suggest, and I always kept saying these things in many interviews, that structure has to be thoroughly inspected. Based on these inspections, we can decide what is next, whether we replace or to modify or to make some kind of changes, but proper inspections is needed for this structure. You must know that the structure, whether it's a building or a bridge, you treat it like a human being, made of several elements. And one single element, weak, bring everything down. So possibility is that we can change this element, or possibility that we can enforce some elements to make the building, sustainable.
Mm-hmm. Professor Hanna, you're a structural engineer, but you're also a geotechnical engineer. Can you explain what that is?
Geotechnical is the structure of the building underground.
Underground.
So I take it from the top to the bottom. Basically it.
So yeah. Looking at the soil that's under the building.
We look at the soil, we look at the structure first, and you see what the structure will give us up to the ground level. And then we examine the ground, and we see what kind of foundation we can put to carry this structure.
How is the soil in Montreal? Is it a very difficult soil to work with?
Not really. We have good soil. In downtown, we have rock at 40 feet. That's why we did our engineering building and John Molson with three level of basement. So the foundation is inexpensive, just right on the rock, generated three level of space for the two buildings. And that was great.
I think, for example, some places around the Mount Royal, like on the Plateau, Mont-Royal, there's a lot of clay there, isn't there? And some of these old houses are literally sinking into the ground. Is that of concern?
Clay is not a problematic, but there is some other kind of soil could be there to create problem. Like, for example, Pierrefonds was built on old river. And I remember some 20 years ago, a contractor bought the land and he started to build. And when he brought the machine to excavate, the entire machine sunk down completely. Completely, was totally covered. And they was able to recover the driver.
So they hadn't properly done their work in terms of inspecting the soil before.
That exactly. I was called to look at it, and we really found from the city that there is a river there, and we gave them the kind of foundation can really fit with the situation. Pierrefonds now is very well built.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Pierre Brisset, how, in terms of sustainable architecture, meaning architecture in Montreal that takes into account climate change and social issues, how would you say, how well are we doing in Montreal? Are we far behind? Are we avant-garde? What's the state of sustainable architecture?
Well, the state of sustainable architecture, again, is what you work with. basically is to be able to understand the situation, the environment, the condition you're working with. You mentioned soil before. For example, if it's understood, one of the criticisms we have with Turcotte Yards relative to soils and when we talk about sustainable is that the location where they want to put the new highway and the new rail line in the yards is over an old riverbed, which has a very weak bearing capacity, which the CN, which has been in the area for over 150 years, has never been able to stabilize, put their installations. When they tried in the 70s to put in a piggyback or truck, rail truck exchange, the soils were so unstable that when the locomotives came in, they sank down a meter and the platform went up a meter. It was like a hydraulic effect. And even rumors are existing or going around saying that the locomotive has been sort of engulfed into the soils in Turcotte Yards. So our argument is why invest so much money in putting an infrastructure, sustainable infrastructure, in an area which doesn't have the soil bearing capacity, mm-hmm. and which would cost a great amount of money to try and stabilize. Can we afford it? Mm-hmm. And so the whole thing, I think what that leads to is to try and understand the area you're working in and do and adapt the design for the various conditions to optimize the sustainability of what you're doing. It's the same with buildings. If you're in an area where you know that you're in unstable ground situation, well, you have to do an analysis to figure out, is it worth the investment of building there rather than elsewhere where you know that you can build a more sustainable infrastructure or building in an area which is more apt of being able to receive this sort of structure. And it's basically to understand the morphology of the area you're working in to be able to incorporate a sustainable approach or solution to the infrastructure or element you're trying to build or the immobilier you're trying to build.
Well, I want to just comment first here. 50 years ago, we had the luxury to choose the building to be here or here or here. So we choose the best soil and we put the building. Now we don't. Mm. We are very limited of land. And whatever soil conditions we have, we still have to deal with it. We had, building with very difficult soil conditions. It cost, but the price of the land now is sky high and people would like to use it.
Are we in the mode of thinking of just repairing problems that are happening, or are we able to think forward to the next, 100 years and how, in terms of how we build these buildings now?
That too. We have to really maintain our existing building and we have to build for 100 years ahead. Whenever we design a structure, we assume this building will stay for 100 years. And that is our assumption. We assume also the density of, number of people in the building will increase, the traffic will increase. So we have to take this into consideration. Studying the history of the last, say, 50 years, we can really plan the next 50 years.
Is the Quebec government forward thinking in the way it's dealing with its public infrastructure?
They started. They start after what happened, last couple of years. I'm sure they're taking it very serious now.
What do you think?
Well, they are starting. The whole thing of maintenance, the whole argument of maintenance, seems to be a long-standing problem that to cut on budgets or transfer budgets for the longest while, the maintenance of infrastructures has been deferred to save money, government money. And now we're paying the price for this lack of maintenance in the past, is that now rather than trying to recuperate a structure, it's unanimous, everything has to be replaced. And I find it unfortunate that with a proper maintenance program, that structures could have been preserved, like the example where you have an infrastructure on a solid ground and you want to move it onto an unstable ground to gain a few extra square feet or a few extra square meters, it seems to me that it's contrary to proper land use, especially where one has to start to have a global picture. It's fine to build and build and build, but you've also got to create park space. I mean, that's another type of sustainable development. I mean, we just can't concrete everything everywhere. And there's a point in time where I believe that in urban planning, that consideration has to be given to multiple use of the territory involved, and try and select a usage for a particular parcel of land that's more apt to suit the needs of the area. The whole thing of the, for example, the whole thing of Turcotte Yards is we're always talking about new rail, TGVs and all this sort of thing coming into Montreal. But if we build wall-to-wall buildings, where is this super rail system going to come in? And it's basically to have an overall view of what is it we want, what is it we need, and what areas can we name to do a particular function or designate to give a particular function. Of course, when you analyze each particular problem, yes, a building can be adapted to a soil if the building has to go there, of course. But if the whole question is, do we need that building? Like, for example, do we need to rebuild Ville-Marie Highway? Whereas with Jane Jacobs, they've stopped inner-city highway programs in Toronto. And when the gardener is going to come down, they're just going to basically remove it and not replace it. They're just going to remove it. And what they're working on now is other ways of transporting people in masses downtown. Because Ville-Marie is basically a downtown commuter highway, which no other city is doing today.
So a lot of cities are thinking about removing highways altogether.
That's right.
And that's the way to go.
When this highway is finished its useful life, like Ville-Marie, they're talking about replacing it. Then the whole analysis has to be looked at. Do we really need another 10-lane highway there, or should we consider who uses it and for what purpose? And that's where the whole thing of urban planning and understanding origin destination studies, where do people come from and where do they go? Ville-Marie users, for example, come from the West Island or Western Laval and come downtown. We built the metro out to Laval, they're talking about other extensions. The West Island, they're talking about putting in the new trains or additional trains and all the rest of it. Is there ways of getting people, what I'm calling the commuter on downtown, other than the highway? So that whole question, it goes just beyond an analysis of sustainable relative to technical ways of doing a building, but it's also to analyze the particular needs to find out, do we really need that type of infrastructure where the thing could be serviced by another way, for example. And this is what I think has to be considered. And it's basically what we talked in Montreal, the Crossroads, in the book that you have in your hand, is to try and find ways of, perhaps there's another way of doing things so we don't have to rebuild something that was an error in the 70s. When they built Ville-Marie, there was a lot of contestation. There was a lot of refusal of that sort of thing. It was the time when Jane Jacobs was very popular in Toronto. In Toronto, they stopped their Spadina inner city highway program. And in Montreal, we seem to continue forge ahead.
Okay, so I think we can talk now about Turcotte as a specific case study. At the moment, can you describe Turcotte in its current state, what it's like? To me, it's just one big spaghetti. How a lot of people view it. Can you, structurally, what kind of infrastructure is it?
I agree with you. It's one piece of spaghetti. It has, it serves a purpose when it was built.
Was to bring people from the north and the west into the city.
Yes. And having communication at different levels, I think it could be much better resolved if the urbanists really look at it carefully and come up with maybe a couple of tunnels underground, maybe in different circulations, and that, as I said, to be remained by the urbanists to decide about this, and the architects as well.
So at the moment, it's crumbling. It's virtually at risk of collapse, and the government says it's an urgent situation. How did we get here in the first place?
As I said before, it was built some years ago. It was built for the time when it was designed and built. Right now, it doesn't serve very much the purpose. Due to deterioration, number one, structurally speaking, and due to the intensity of the traffic, which has drastically increased. We need much more than this. If you go in the rush hour, you see the cars for 2-3 miles, like a big parking lot. And that is really, could reach or conclude that is no longer serving the purpose.
Monsieur Brisset, we need more space for traffic.
Well, the question is we need more space for urban mobility. And urban mobility isn't defined by traffic only. Urban mobility, there's active transport, cycling, walking, there's a public transport, and there's the car transport. And the whole argument that we bring out in the Montreal at the Crossroads is that we have, for cities to survive better, we've got to diminish the car transport or go towards Paris more than Detroit. Approach, especially that we have the occasion of doing it now. The monies are available. We're talking about billions of dollars we want to invest on urban transport. Maybe we should relook at urban transport as a global view and not just traffic counts. Mm-hmm. Because the whole thing of traffic counts is that the Ville-Marie axis or east-west axis is basically a commuter run. Commuter displacement is different from commercial. Commercial is trucking, exporting, all the thing that's related to the economy of Quebec. That's basically Highway 15, the north-south, the one that crosses Champlain Bridge. That's an economic run. Whereas the highway coming downtown is a commuter run, which is basically what, when we wrote the book, Montreal at the Crossroad, we questioned, is do we need to increase the commuter run capacity via cars.
So these are people coming, a lot of them from the West Island, for example, on the 20 Highway, going through the Turcotte Interchange into the Ville-Marie Tunnel to go work downtown, for example.
That's right. And when we worked out the alternatives, we suggested burying certain sections of the highway to make it, to put the emphasis of transforming, for example, the Ville-Marie is two structures, transforming one structure for public transport and the other one for car transport.
I want to get more into your proposal, but just first, if we could understand, what is the government proposing at the moment for the Turcotte Interchange?
Basically, the government is proposing bigger highway infrastructures. Basically, it's to increase the width of Highway 15, double the width, for example. Their argument is, oh, now today's standards is you've got to have shoulder widths and this width and that width and the other thing. But basically, Highway 15 going towards Champlain Bridge from Turcotte is being doubled in width, to accommodate more lanes. And the whole thing is being sort of imposed on the neighborhood as visually as a structure in the air. And the thing is that with that, it's going to create more social barriers. It's going to create more isolation or fragmentation of the city tissue.
Why is it going to? Because at the moment, it's very high up. They're going to bring it down a level. It's still not going to be on the ground.
No.
It'll be closer to the ground, and that makes it more difficult for neighborhoods to come together.
So
socially, it has a big impact as well.
Especially that structure that they're bringing down is going to be twice as wide.
What do you think of the government's proposal for Turcotte, Professor Hanna?
That may be difficult to implement, because if you want to double the size of the bridge, you need more land, both sides, and that will create another kind of problem. My solution is go underground, put tunnels. One underground.
Tunnels coming from where, for example?
Sorry?
Where would you put the tunnels? Where would people be coming from to go in the tunnel?
Well, you can, for example, slope it from one side underground, so the ground surface will not really see the traffic as heavy as we see it now. A combination of the two. I'm not saying just everything underground. Like Laval Tunnel, like La Fontaine Tunnel, all of these are really connecting very well big cities without any disturbance to on the surface.
And that would solve some of the problem of these neighborhoods being separated.
The architect would not like it. I can tell you this.
No. Basically,
Yes.
Basically, in the Notre Dame argument, we proposed tunneling the highway underneath the Hochelaga Maisonneuve back in the year 2000. But basically, the whole question of tunneling highways. Paris had a tunneled highway project back in the late 90s, early 2000, where they want to tunnel all a series of expressways underneath the center city.
This was before they did the circle highway around?
Basically in 2000 when they had all the circle highways.
Oh, okay.
They were talking about adding a tunneled highway system underneath the city. And what they've realized, like the Boston example, is that tunneling highways doesn't resolve the problem of diminishing or making the modal shift. The whole argument is to try and make a modal shift first, and then whatever you have in the way of necessity for highways, whatever is necessary. But Montreal does not need a highway between Turcotte and the East End going through downtown, whether it be tunneled or whatever.
Yes. So your proposal is to decrease traffic altogether. We should have fewer people using cars.
Yeah.
And so for the Turcotte interchange, what kind of solutions, other than increasing traffic and bringing more cars in, can we bring?
Well, basically what we say is we concentrate on the north-south axis, going to Champlain Bridge. That has to be kept, but it doesn't have to be widened, doesn't have to be doubled in width. Maintain the same six lanes as there are now. Basically keep the highway, because from Turcotte to the Champlain Bridge is the economic run. So basically that has to be conserved. But in our proposal, Montreal at the Crossroad, we propose putting that underground, basically, through the Côte Saint-Paul area, etc. As Dr. Hanna proposed, we took that stretch of highway in the urban area, and sunk it underground. So we both agree on that point. The thing is that for Ville-Marie, first of all, when we talk about Turcotte, most of the people understand Turcotte as just being the interchange itself, scope of the interchange.
Yes.
Turcotte is not just the interchange. It's Ville-Marie from Guy Street to Ville-Saint-Pierre. And it's also from Notre-Dame-de-Grâce to the Champlain Bridge. And this is what, when we talk about it only costs $24 million to build Turcotte, it's the interchange. We're not talking about the 15 kilometers plus of highways. So the whole question is do we have to rebuild all these highways, considering that the Ville-Marie run is a commuter run? It's all the argument of what is necessary for the commuter run. And do we have to invest so massively in infrastructures for commuter runs when we've seen in other cities, San Francisco, Portland, Toronto, that they've said no. That's it. It's game over for highways as commuter runs.
So there are alternatives to commuters getting into their cars, sometimes only one person in their car to go drive. There's a talk, for example, of this the famous shuttle between Montreal and Trudeau Airport that could also take some commuters on the way. There's the Lachine tramway. What's the status of those specific projects that are aimed at reducing the number of cars coming into downtown?
Well, basically, again, it has to be a total view. You can come with a whole series of little projects, Lachine Run, the Trudeau, West Island Train. Say, look, why don't you put a spine system, one end of the island to the other, and branch off, a branch to Lachine, a branch to the airport, because the beauty of rail transport is you can have branching off. That is, not all the trains have to go to Saint-Anne de Bellevue. Some trains can, with the rail switching, go up to Dorval. And it's basically to try and realize an infrastructure that permits to expand into various areas based on public rail transport. The other beauty of rail is you don't use de-icing salts. The big thing that kills our structures in Montreal is de-icing salts. We still haven't come to grips with how concrete reacts. Maybe today they have, but basically with the structures done in the 60s and 70s, they really haven't come to grips with how to deal with structures versus de-icing salts.
Professor, which is a whole I'm sure that's something you see very much in your everyday work,
as
the effect
said,
of salt.
You know, this is not a problem centered on just the Turco Center. It goes as far as 15 kilometer in every side, and if you want to make a changes here, you have to change it from the source. And that is lots of money, and the government is reluctant to look at it, in my opinion.
You know, when you've said about the Turcotte interchange in the past that when they built it, they should have predicted how many people were going to move to the South Shore. This is more of a demographic issue, but it is a main problem, isn't it? These populations moving, and so South Shore, huge increase in population. How do we predict these kinds of things when we're building today?
If we study the last 100 years, we should be able to forecast the following 100 years. That's the way we do it. We don't have other technique except to study the past to prepare for the future. Again, that is the only way to do it, to forecast the load on the bridges, the size of the bridges. We do, as I told you before, we do things to stay for 100 years. See, if I do a bridge today, I expect this bridge to serve for over 100 years.
Your reaction?
The big problem we've lived since the Second World War, and that's the big main crisis, is urban sprawl. It's a spreading out. Laval, la Couronne Nord, and the Couronne Sud, what they call the Couronne Sud, is not serviceable by public transport. It's too spread out. Densities are too low. We tend to consume land as if there was no tomorrow. So basically, the whole argument of, and this was made possible with the flexibility of using cars, you can go anywhere. The whole thing is the new society brought about by the car culture, whereas we're in a free land, we can go anywhere we want. It brought about urban sprawl, which many urbanists now are really, really, really ashamed of or criticizing, in the sense that urban sprawl is not just highways and displacement, but the amount of services you need to serve these areas is unbelievable. You have to build new schools, new hospitals, new this, new that, new the other thing. And then finally, what happens in fact is you get out of a 10 kilometer radius of downtown Montreal and you try to go from one place to another, that more than just walking distance, you don't have a choice other than go by car. And this is the whole notion of urban sprawl, I think, is in the 21st century, the urbanists are becoming more sensitive to this sort of thing and say, well, that's why they're talking a lot about in these new urban plans of TOD, transit-oriented development, all the rest of this, is that try and concentrate your development to an area accessible by public transport. Because this whole use, freedom of land use, and conversion of agricultural, precious agricultural land, into more of urban, the extension of urban sprawl, is an unhealthy future, and it's a procedure which is very time-consuming and costly to operate. And this is, it's a bit the whole social issue, is what does the future see in urban planning? Are we gonna try and put to grips and say, we're gonna limit urban sprawl and concentrate urban planning onto a specific area? For example, the whole population of the Greater Montreal region could comfortably fit on the island of Montreal, in theory, quote unquote, with a lot of green space and all the rest of it. But it's this greed of selling off land, making a quick buck to do a quick development, selling your buildings, and then the problem's not mine. I've cashed in. I'm off to the Bahamas for my the rest of my days.
And that's not a very sustainable solution.
It's not a sustainable solution. And this is, it's the whole notion of urban planning. What's the future of land use, which mm-hmm. is becoming critical?
Yep. And much more we could talk about. Specifically, you've both been critical about the Turcotte Interchange government proposal at the moment. Where are we at? What stage are we at? And are people like you being listened to by the government?
We are in stage one. We are
still back to stage one.
In a stage one. And I just want to add something to what Pierre said, is the urbanists should not be blamed in Montreal. If you look at the city of Toronto or city of Chicago, this our new city has a master plan for development from now and maybe 50 years from now. As compared to Montreal, was built in bits and pieces. All the Montreal was here, Mount Royal was there, and there is no kind of...
It was not possible to have a vision for the entire thing at once.
And if you try to develop a highway, you may have to go through cities, you may have to cut many buildings. It's not as easy as if you try to solve this problem in a new city like Toronto or Chicago. I don't know if, you know, this is my opinion, because we don't have really a master plan for Montreal as compared to these cities.
Well, we've talked about many problems. Can we finish this conversation by cheering ourselves up a little bit? Are there some great infrastructure projects in Montreal? Can you think of one example of something that is sustainable, that works well, that thinks forwardly? Can you give me just one example, Pierre Brisset?
Oh, geez, I was hoping you could. So that I can reflect on it. It's basically a successful project in Montreal. Okay, let's talk about good things. Okay.
Yes.
Place Ville-Marie.
Okay.
It's still an icon of Montreal today.
That was built in...
The late 50s, early 60s. It was opened in 1962. There was a vision of the future. The Montreal metro system, vision of the future. Even the concept of Ville-Marie, although I don't agree with it today, the concept of Ville-Marie was a visionary issue. They built it in tunnel down through the downtown, where originally it was planned on being two level on the Comin Street through the old part of Montreal.
Mm, oh my goodness.
You know, and the Carey Expressway, when they built it, Drapeau insisted it'd be depressed so that with the eventual possibility of covering it, because the original plan was supposed to be on light metropolitan on pillars. So then they had the vision of doing these things properly. And to even say that the Ville-Marie Highway was a predecessor to what they did in Boston. Boston copied Montreal.
Really?
Yes.
In terms of the tunnel going through the downtown?
Because Montreal was the first city to build a tunneled interchange. It wasn't just a highway. It was a whole network interchange. You got five levels underground of ramps, of pedestrian walkways for the metro. I mean, it's a whole spaghetti system, which you see at Turcotte, but completely underground. It's not just for cars, public transport, active transport, name it, it's in there.
An incredible design.
Except maybe cycling paths, but they've added cycling paths on the surface. But the whole thing is that was a predecessor. Boston said, hey, geez, they did it in Montreal. Because to build that thing in the 60s, they had to dig 100 feet deep in solid rock, as Professor Hannah mm-hmm. says. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was basically the project of the century.
Professor Adèle Hanna and Pierre Brisset, thank you very much indeed for being with us. You've been listening to Beyond the Headlines. I'm Caroline Locker. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.